Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Ladies and gentlemen, this week, the Felon-in-Chief found himself where he really most enjoys being. On the front page, every day. Every day this week, he said or did something that made front page news. Must have thrilled him. It titillated me, I'll tell you that. There was the instance where he attacked two female reporters, telling one to quiet Piggy. That's a quote. And attacking the other one, asserting that maybe her network, ABC, should lose its license, even though networks don't have licenses. Just called her a bad reporter, didn't like her attitude. I felt bad for the guy, really. Seriously. You know, he was under, I don't know what he was under, or on, for that matter. But I thought, there's a better way to handle this than just to denounce and revile these women verbally and publicly. It was something that he could do. We knew he could do it. And it would be, as I say, right in his wheelhouse. And person in his position could probably do it without negative consequences. Simply grab them by the kitten. He was, of course, this week host to Crown Prince bin Salman from Saudi Arabia, a man who the CIA identified as the mastermind behind the savage murder of American journalist Adnan Khashoggi. But Trump was being nice to him, the Crown Prince. There's apparently some business dealings going on between them. And I don't remember where I saw this report. I read so much. But at the end of the meeting, of the series of meetings, there was a big dinner and everything to cement the improved relations between the United States and Saudi Arabia. The Crown Prince gifted the president with a golden bone saw. Hello, welcome to the show.
Sitting here in limbo, but I know it won't be long. Sitting here in limbo, like a bird without a song. Sitting here in limbo, got some time to search my soul. Well, they're putting up resistance, but I know that my fate will lead me on. I don't know where life will lead me, but I know where I've been. I can't say what life. Show me what I know, what I've seen. Tried my hand at love and friendship, but all that is past and gone. This little boy is moving on. Sitting here in limbo, waiting for the tide to flow. Sitting here in limbo, knowing that I have to go. Well, they're putting up resistance.
existence, but I know that my fate will lead me on. I can't say what life will show me, but I know what I've seen. I can't say where life will lead me, but I know where I've been. Tried my hand at love and friendship, but all that is past and gone. This little boy is moving on. Sitting in limbo, 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 sitting in limbo.
From New Orleans, far from limbo, but nervously expecting our turn with Border Patrol and ICE. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of AI. AI can't hear everyone equally. This report from Axios.com, artificial intelligence is struggling to understand accented English. I said accented English and non-standard dialects, creating problems that can cascade into biased hiring, grading, or clinical records. AI is deciding often now who gets a job interview, how students are graded, what doctors record in a patient's chart. But major speech-to-text systems make far more errors for African-American speakers than for white speakers, for example. Some companies use AI to transcribe and analyze job interview requests, scoring candidates on clarity, keywords, or sentiment. Schools use voice AI for oral reading tests, class captions, and language learning. And AI tools listen during doctor visits and convert conversations into medical notes. Various studies show that AI systems misinterpret speech from some black speakers or others who don't use standard English. Sarah Myers West at the AI Now Institute says it can lead to a misdiagnosis of false information in criminal cases. Quote, we're already seeing AI replicate patterns of inequality. If these systems decide who gets a job interview or access to care, they risk amplifying these same divides. Unquote. She says these AI systems mishear people. Because they're being deployed without proper testing or oversight. Alexan Konecki, an assistant professor of information services at Cornell Tech, says there's insufficient awareness of how AI speech models are being applied in high-stakes domains, your healthcare, your criminal justice. AI's listening gap risks making speech itself a new frontier of discrimination. Errol Musk should be happy. Gartner, the research outfit, warns that fossil fuel dominance in on-site power generation isn't sustainable given the rapid rise in data center energy consumption due to AI servers. This is reported by the British Tech Journal Register. The firm forecasts that electricity required by data centers worldwide is set to expand 16% this year alone, likely to double by 2030. The rapid rise of AI-optimized servers and infrastructure is the chief culprit fueling the increase, says Gartner. Means AI infrastructure will account for more and more of the total consumption of electricity. The frenetic pace of data center building compared with the glacial pace of power grid expansion means many facilities will wait a long time to get connected. Operators are increasingly turning to on-site generation, at least in the short term. This likely means burning extra fossil fuels that add to pollution and greenhouse gas emissions. Georgia has become a hotspot for data center development over the past few years, some research indicates. According to Wired, it's one of the fastest growing markets for data center development in the country, thanks to some nice tax breaks. It's also now a nexus for organizing against data centers. Community opposition to data centers, a new report finds, is on the rise across the country, and red states, including Georgia and Indiana, are leading this wave of bipartisan opposition. The AP reports that children's and consumer advocacy groups are urging parents not to buy AI toys. During the holiday season, these toys marketed to kids as young as 2 years old are generally powered by AI models that have already been shown to harm children and teenagers, like ChatGPT. That's according to an advisory published this week by the children's advocacy group Fair Play, signed by more than 150 organizations and individual experts, such as child psychiatrists and educators. Quote, the serious harm that AI chatbots have inflicted on children are well documented, including fostering obsessive use, having explicit sexual conversations, and encouraging unsafe behaviors and self-harm, said Fair Play. Unquote, Fair Play. The AI toys made by companies including Curio Interactive and Ki Technologies are often marketed as educational. Fair Play says they can displace important creative and learning activities. They promise friendship, but disrupt children's relationships and resilience, according to the group. Your reaction, Koofy?
I love you. I hope you love me back.
Well,
you could poison the people who don't love you.
A separate report this week by Common Sense Media and psychiatrist at Stanford warned teenagers against using popular AI chatbots as therapists. Fair Play has been warning about AI toys for years. They just weren't as advanced as they are today. AI toys are mostly sold online and more popular in Asia than elsewhere. So let their kids be, damn it. Some have started to appear on store shelves in the United States. More on the way. Quote, everything has been released with no regulation and no research. So it gives us extra pause when all of a sudden we see more and more manufacturers, including Mattel, who recently partnered with OpenAI, potentially putting out these products. Mattel has a talking Hello Barbie doll that is apparently recording and analyzing children's conversations. At the U.S. Public Interest Research Group, they've called out the trend in a report called Trouble in Toyland. Quote, we found some of these AI toys will talk in depth about sexually explicit topics, will offer advice on where a child can find matches or knives, act dismayed when you say you have to leave, and have limited or no parental controls, according to its report. Dr. Dana Susskind, a pediatric surgeon and social scientist who studies early brain development, says an AI toy collapses the work that children do when they use their imagination to create a pretend conversation. It answers instantly, smoothly, and often better than a human would. We often don't yet know the developmental consequences of outsourcing that imaginative labor to an artificial agent, but it's very plausible that it undercuts the kind of creativity and executive function that traditional pretend play builds, according to Susskind. And there's more. People should not blindly trust everything AI tools tell them. Who says that? The boss of Google's parent company, Alphabet. Google has an AI. In an interview with the BBC, Google's chief executive, or sorry, Alphabet's chief executive, says AI models are, quote, prone to errors. Huh. He must be mistaken. Oh, and urge people to use them alongside other tools. He says it highlights the importance of having a rich information ecosystem. Some experts say big tech firms such as Google should not be inviting users to fact-check their tools' output, like it says at the bottom of every chatbot page, but should focus instead on making their systems more reliable. The systems make up answers, and they make up answers to please us, and that's a problem, says Gina Neff, professor of responsible AI at Queen Mary University in London. Quote, it's okay if I'm asking what movie should I see next. It's quite different if I'm asking really sensitive questions about my health, mental well-being, about science, about news, she says. Another person has another opinion. Fox News boss Suzanne Scott, talking to students in South Carolina this week, says, quote, there's too much doomerism on the storytelling of AI. I guess Fox News needs some advertising from OpenAI. An erotic role-play chatbot, an AI image-created platform called Desires, left millions of user-uploaded photos exposed and available to the public. The databases included nearly 2 million photos, including many of completely random people. I love random people. With the exposed data shows how many people do role-play apps that allow face-swapping features to create non-consensual sexual imagery of everyone, from the most famous entertainers in the world to women who are not public figures. In addition to the real photo inputs, the exposed data includes generated outputs, which are mostly sexual. The U.S. House of Representatives has heard that large language model builders can exploit users' conversations for further training and commercial benefit with little oversight or concern for privacy risks. Jennifer King, a Stanford Privacy and Data Policy Fellow, says there's little to no transparency into how AI developers collect and process the data they used for model training. I love training models. Oh, sorry. News of AI. And now, while we're in the digital wonderland,
looks like Musk
love. Elon Musk is a better role model than Jesus, better at conquering than Hitler, and is better at almost every human task. His Grok sycophantic AI chatbot, according to 404 Media, has been tweaked sometime in the last several days, will now choose Musk as being superior to the rest of humanity at any given task. His online encyclopedia, Grokopedia, cites the neo-Nazi website Stormfront as a source 42 times. That's lucky. And relies on other websites that experts have shunned as unreliable or hate-filled. That's according to an analysis by researchers at Cornell, reported by NBC. Grokopedia, which Musk launched last month as a competitor to what he calls woke Wikipedia, also cites the conspiracy theory website InfoWars as a source 34 times, and the white nationalist website VDare 107 times, according to the researchers. The guardrails are off, says Harold Treedman, one of the paper's co-authors and a computer science graduate student at Cornell. Quote, the publicly determined, community-oriented rules that try to maintain Wikipedia as a reliable human-generated source are not in application on Grokopedia, he says. He's a former senior privacy engineer for the Wikimedia Foundation, so he might know. Researchers found that Grokopedia includes more than 12,000 citations to online sources that previous academic research has deemed as having very low credibility. And they found that Grokpedia cites those domains three times more often than Wikipedia. And the European Union is in touch with social media network X regarding hate speech content on Grok. The EU described it as appalling and going against European human rights values, according to Reuters. Quote, we're in touch with X because the company has the obligation to take action against risks relating to Grok, said the spokesperson for the EU. Grok's output is appalling. Such output goes against Europe's fundamental rights and values, he said. No immediate reply from X. By the way, referring to that tweaking of Grok, some wise guys and gals started asking who was better at some, shall we say, not fit for radio activities. And it turns out Grok says Elon Musk is best at drinking human urine. Sounds like Musk love.
For my parents' new shed, which they built after their 2-year stay in a minimum security facility, I'm Adam Buchholz, back after that break with a new module of the Entrepod, the podcast for would-be entrepreneurs and everyone who wants to be one. We're sponsored today by ScrapeX, the app that lets you scrape all your personal info off the internet and into one free advertising service. It's been a while, and I've been exploring lots of new stuff for you, and some of that new stuff is my guest today on the pod. He's Grayson Spunt, and he's at the front of the forefront of the latest trend in AI. Grayson, welcome to the pod.
That's a lovely pod, Adam.
We try to keep it nice. Mm-hmm. Grayson, we've been talking about the new AI thing.
Mm-hmm.
What is it again?
Adam, large language models, your chatbots.
Oh, I don't actually have it.
I mean, all the large companies' chatbots, they try to be all things to all people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, generating text, generating music, generating video.
You're saying there's too much of what my dad's favorite rock band called My Generation.
Kinda. More kind of not.
Oh.
But the new thing in AI is developing models that specialize in one particular function.
Mm.
That one choice makes a model that's much cheaper to train.
Oh, that's a big one.
And that's less likely to hallucinate.
You know, I microdosed last week, and not all hallucinations.
And we're unveiling an AI model called Pinquity. It does one thing. For the millions of workers who don't necessarily want to come back to the office, Pinquity devises the perfect way for that particular employee to tell that particular employer that particular information.
Wow. It sounds way particular. But I noticed you said it's called Pinquity.
Mm-hmm. That's good noticing.
How come you left out the pro? Like, it's not pro-Pinquity, is it?
It's not. Pro turns off people who think that means taking out an expensive subscription. That's not what we're about. I mean, we will roll out a pro product at a time certain.
And how will that differ from the free version?
For a limited time, yeah. The pro version just way amps up the particularity of the messages Pinquity provides, makes it sound maybe even a little too personal.
Now that is so cracked. So are you just in the angel cake stage of investment into Pinquity?
We're doing that round this week. We're seeking $100 million in funding with a company valuation of $7 billion. That should get us through the first half of 2026. And after that, the sky really is the limit.
Or the market.
We're saying the same thing. I'm just saying it better.
Grayson Spunt, I know you were in the wholesale grocery business before you got into this, but you've got the self-confidence of a real tech bro.
Well, thanks, Adam. You've got a great chat.
Until next time, I'm Adam Buchholz saying so long from the pod that makes its own waves, the Entrepod.
My Mother liked her white wine when she was alive. She was desperate to live, but her limit was five. Carefully I'd kiss her and send her off to bed. We always stuck with white wine, we stayed away from red. Always stick with white wine, stay away from mother. Liked her white wine, she'd have a glass or two almost every single night after her day was through. Sancerre, Chardonnay, Chablis, Pinot Grigio, just to take the edge off, just to get the glow. You got to take the edge off if you wanna get the. I still like my white wine, and I'll have a glass or two. And when I'm down, I'll drink some whiskey. It's something I shouldn't do. And every now and then, I'll take a drop of red. When I'm with a woman that I want to take to bed. When I'm with a woman that I want to take to mother. Liked her white wine when she was alive. She was desperate to live, but her limit was five. Carefully I'd kiss her, send her off to bed. Thank God we stuck to white wine and we stayed away from mother. Liked her white wine.
From New Orleans, this is Le Show. Now a little news of our friend the Atom, the owner of 3 Mile Island. Remember that? Remember 3 Mile Island? That was a thing. The owner of that plant, it's been shuttered for a while, has been awarded a $1 billion federal loan guarantee. No, not to feed hungry people in the neighborhood. No, it will enable it to shift onto taxpayers some of the risk of its plan to restart 3 Mile Island and sell the electricity to Microsoft for its data centers. It's from the Washington Post. Amid rising energy demands, the taxpayer-backed loan will go towards the unprecedented effort to reopen mothballed U.S. nuclear plant that suffered, you know, that partial meltdown a few decades ago. Meltdowns are good, aren't they? The terms involve the federal government pledging to cover up to $1 billion if there's a default. Such guarantees are typically used by developers to lower the cost of project financing. Lenders are willing to offer more favorable terms when the federal government stands as a backstop. But such incentives, says the Post, also raise thorny questions about who should shoulder the financial risk that comes with generating energy for the wealthy tech companies. Critics say such efforts should not be subsidized by taxpayers, and that big nuclear projects are particularly risky because they are often plagued by huge cost overruns and delays. I've noticed that. The reactor to be restarted is not the one that went bluey in the late 70s. This one was shuttered in 2019, according to the Energy Department, was never fully decommissioned. The company plans to restart it by 2028. The company is called Constellation. It would provide enough electricity to power 800,000 homes, but the homes aren't going to get the electricity. The data centers will. And by the way, the company has renamed the power plant the Crane Clean Energy Center because 3 Mile Island sounds so, you know, tainted. Speaking of which, the Trump administration wants to get a new bevy of nuclear plants started. But despite forecasts for spiking electricity use and pledges from the Energy Department to bolster nuclear power, utilities aren't inking contracts, says Politico, to build new plants with the large-scale light water reactors that have been familiar parts of the American landscape for a while. Quote, I wouldn't build a nuclear plant, unquote, Calvin Butler, CEO of Exelon. I said, Exelon, a major U.S. utility that is aiming to start getting into the power business. He continues, what I could do is lean in on combined cycle gas turbines. What I could do is build community solar. What I could do is more battery storage. Duke Energy, a major utility in the Southeast, is now hedging after it had laid out loose plans last month to produce more than a gigawatt of new nuclear power by 2037. Quote, we still need to figure out what we're going to do with cost overrun protection and how we're going to protect our investors and our customers from overruns, says the CEO. Nothing going forward until we have those other items resolved. Unquote. And, of course, none of these reports mention any plans for the waste. Speaking of which, the first capsules of high-level radioactive waste have been removed from a water-filled pool at the Hanford nuclear plant in Washington to prepare them for safer dry storage in steel-lined reinforced concrete casks. It's been 10 years in the making, according to the Tri-City Herald up there in Richland, Washington. Now the capsules, which contain 30% of the radioactivity at the Hanford site, about 80 million curies, that's a lot of curies, are at risk of being damaged and releasing radiation in the event of an earthquake. That's where they are now. They're stored in a stainless steel-lined pool designed to be used only until 2004. I think that's in the past. The pool is in the waste encapsulation and storage facility at Hanford. Quote, by transferring the capsules to protective casks and moving them, we ensure safe and compliant storage of the capsules and reduce extensive monitoring and maintenance costs, says the head of the contractor doing the work. The containers will be stored on outdoor pads, much like those used to temporarily store used nuclear fuel at commercial power plants. Pulling the initial capsules out of underwater storage is just the first step in a project to take several years to move nearly 2,000 capsules, about 22 inches long, to the safer storage. Not the safest. Filling the first dry storage casks with radioactive capsules and transferring them to the outdoor pads until it can be permanently disposed will take about 2 months, about 18 casks filled and moved to dry storage. About 12 years ago, the Oregon Department of Energy raised concerns that the concrete walls of the pool had lost structural integrity due to high radiation exposure over four decades. Well, that can't happen again. And the Department of Energy Office of Inspector General next year found that the pool could be at risk in a severe earthquake. Clean, cheap, safe, too safe to meter, our friend the atom. Ladies and gentlemen, Mark Twain said, history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. That came to mind this week when the felon-in-chief was sitting with the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, who had been fingered by U.S. intelligence as the man responsible for the murder of American journalist Adnan Khashoggi. Trump's response when asked about that included this.
Whether you like him or didn't like him, things happened, but he knew nothing about it.
He being the crown prince that was fingered by the U.S. intelligence. It rhymed for me with something that happened in the early days of the U.S. war on Iraq, when Baghdad, the Iraqi army was sent home, and so the city of Baghdad erupted in a frenzy of looting, including the looting of a couple of important museums. And then U.S. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, a friend of the recently departed Dick Cheney, said this about the looting.
Stuff happens, and it's untidy.
Yeah, looting is untidy. You got to give them that. So, stuff happens, things happen. Donald Rumsfeld Donald Trump united in the rhyming of history and in song.
We know what we know. We think we know what we don't know. But if we don't know what we don't know,
run all these rules.
Stuff happens. Our intel, it was bulletproof. We had the bullets, just not the proof. Our bullets, they proved what bullets prove. Stuff happens. Stuff happens. Looters got to loot. Stuff happens. Shooters shoot. It's all moot. Freedom can be untidy. For years, Iraq has been untidy. So why do you hate their freedom? Stuff happens.
We had a visiting sheikh. He gave some people the shakes. But why shouldn't I shake his hand? Happen. Khashoggi got a little shaken up. Many people said his credentials were shaky. So why shouldn't I shake him? Things happen. Things happen. They happen. You know they always will. Things happen. Words can cut. A saw can kill. My book is about making deals. I didn't write it, I didn't read it. But when a crown prince comes to deal,
say it again, girls.
It's a Trump thing. Things happen.
Speaking of Saudis and the felon-in-chief, some news of the crypto winter. Saudi luxury real estate developer Dar Global, that's a company, not a guy, hopes to fund much of its latest Trump hotel in the Maldives. They have a plan, selling blockchain-based crypto tokens to U.S. retail investors. That's according to its CEO. Dar Global is one of the Trump Organization's main overseas partners. Seven projects under development, including an 80-story tower in Dubai, a golf resort in Qatar, and hotels across Saudi Arabia and Oman. Oman. Developers typically tap institutional investors or wealthy family officers for the cash to fund large-scale projects. But Dar Global's CEO said in an interview that he hoped to fund up to 70% of its latest Trump hotel in the Maldives by selling tokens. Quote, we would like to tokenize 70% of that development fund to as many token holders as possible, said the CEO, saying the biggest crypto market and the biggest amount of investors are in the U.S. The tokens would be Trump coins, perhaps. The crypto industry, as you may know, played a significant role in last year's elections, spending millions of dollars. I wonder where that money came from. With influence going through super political action committees, they reshaped key races, such as $40 million spent supporting Republican crypto-friendly candidate Bernie Moreno, won against a crypto critic, Sherrod Brown, in Ohio. The crypto lobbying organization Fairshake has amassed already $141 million ahead of next year's election. And the head of the digital chamber, Cody Carbone, says the group aims to boost pro-crypto candidates at every level of government. Quote, we want every lawmaker from Congress down to your local school board to be pro-crypto, unquote. Like, what would your school board have? Ask Cody, won't you? And now news of the godly. A New Jersey state judge is ordering Seton Hall University. It's not a seat and it's not a hall. It's a university to turn over a trove of documents connected to a 2019 investigation into clergy abuse, a victory for survivors who've spent years in court seeking accountability, according to Politico. The order stems from reporting by Politico that Seton Hall's president, Monsignor Joseph Riley, did not properly report allegations of sexual misconduct when he was a seminary leader. The judge has been overseeing litigation on about 450 claims of clergy abuse within the Archdiocese of Newark and at Seton Hall, but expressed disbelief earlier this year when attorneys for the plaintiffs learned about the 2019 investigation, saying they had to find out about it this year in Politico. He determined that Seton Hall violated a previous court order by not disclosing those documents. His latest order forces the university to share with the lawyers damning documents that named about a dozen priests, including Monsignor Riley, though he was not accused of abuse. It showed that Riley knew of sexual abuse claims, did not properly report them, and was recommended to step down from boards and his leadership position at the time as a seminary leader. Despite those findings, and after he took a year-long sabbatical, Seton Hall promoted Riley to lead the university last July with the approval of the Newark Archdiocese. Meanwhile, a lawsuit filed against the Catholic Diocese of Kansas City, St. Joseph, Missouri, this week claims the church covered up sexual abuse that the plaintiff allegedly experienced as a child at the hands of a priest around 50 years ago. It marks one of several lawsuits in recent years against that diocese, alleging sexual abuse concealed by the church, and marks one of several allegations of that stuff against former priest John Tulipana. The abuse occurred several times, says the lawsuit, between 1976 and 1979 in various locations, including the child's home, an abandoned warehouse, and the church. The child's mother reported Tulipano's conduct to the Reverend James Hart, who reportedly told her the church was a family and that it would be taken care of. The mother also reportedly told the diocese about Tulipano's conduct after she was unsatisfied with that response. The child reported the conduct to the Reverend Hart and to the Reverend Thomas Patrick Tobin during two separate confessions, according to court documents. Over the course of 20 years in two states, Clint Massey had, according to court documents and by his own admission, sexually abused children within the old Apostolic Lutheran Church community. He touched girls under blankets when their parents were present, in the backseat of a car with other passengers, even in the pews at church. His abuse was such an open secret, according to the Minnesota Star Tribune, that mothers warned their daughters to stay away from him. Some former victims, now adults, confronted the leader of the old Apostolic Lutheran Church, Daryl Bruckmeyer, about what Massey had done to them. Church leaders told Massey to stay away from the congregation's children, and they sent him to a therapist, but they never reported his crimes to police. That's required by law. Instead, Bruckmeyer and other leaders in the church encouraged the victims to take part in forgiveness sessions, which allowed Massey, now 50, to continue abusing children. He did not respond to requests for comment, but has denied abuse allegations relating to some individual victims in pending lawsuits. And right back here in New Orleans, Archbishop Gregory Amond took the witness stand this week in the federal bankruptcy court, defending his decision 5 years ago to place the church under bankruptcy protection and arguing that a $230 million settlement is the fairest way to compensate hundreds of clergy sex abuse survivors. He also vowed to uphold new child protection measures, saying, "I know you've been through a lot of pain," talking to the survivors, continuing, "It's unfortunate and embarrassing for me as a priest to think that someone is in a trusted position like a priest or minister would take advantage of someone sexually. So my heartfelt apology to those who've been abused," unquote. The New Orleans retiring archbishop. And speaking of apologies, here are the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Saying they didn't do enough to stop doing business with an illegal bookmaker, Caesars Entertainment executives apologized profusely and accepted responsibility for their failure in front of the Nevada Gaming Commission this week. The commission voted 4-1 to agree to a $7.8 million settlement negotiated with Caesars by the Nevada Gaming Control Board. While being criticized for the company's inaction, it wasn't as sharp as it was against other strip operators. Resorts World fined $10 million, MGM $8 million, Wynn Resorts $5 million. Tim Davie, the retiring head of the BBC, has apologized to BBC staff after a chaotic period at the UK's national broadcaster. In an email, the director general said he recognized it had been a time of upheaval following his resignation, which came after the Panorama botched edit of Donald Trump's January 6th speech. Quote, "I'm sorry it has been such an unsettling time. There will be a lot of speculation about the future, but at its heart, the BBC is thousands of caring people who are utterly committed to serving the public," unquote. Davie. The BBC, of course, last week apologized to Trump, but it said it intends to fight the U.S. president who has threatened legal action. Like for billions of dollars, you know, not pounds. For weeks, San Francisco residents and officials have been slamming the Navy for waiting nearly a year to disclose that a radioactive heavy metal was found on the former Hunters Point Naval Shipyard. That's a Superfund site the federal government has been cleaning up for decades, as you do. This week, Navy officials took a rare step during a community meeting full of angry residents. They apologized. The Navy took 11 months to report the discovery of plutonium-239, used in nuclear weapons and power plants, to its regulatory partners. "I've really thought about the situation that's occurred. On this issue, we did not do a good job," said the Navy's environmental coordinator. Continuing, "We were too busy being engineers and scientists and trying to think through the data and did not put ourselves in the community's shoes. I can't undo what's been done, but we need to know better," unquote. The Guardian newspaper reports that two concert goers, Francesca Hunt and Chloe Laws, each attended a show by the singer Lorde at London's O2 Arena. Both of them happened to be wearing shirts from football club Palestina, a UK brand that makes soccer-inspired merch in support of Palestine. Laws said she was admitted through security without any issues before a guard approached her inside the venue and told her she needed to take the jersey off or be escorted out. She added, when she asked why she was being asked to take the shirt off, the guard said it was a matter of, quote, "making sure everyone can have a nice time." Hunt said an O2 staff member told her no football tops were allowed in the arena. weird rule for a multi-use arena. She saw plenty of non-Palestine jerseys in the crowd. The O2 Arena management has shared the statement, quote, "We sincerely apologize. The safety and security of our staff, visitors, and artists is always our paramount priority. In light of this incident, we're reviewing our procedures and will revisit training to prevent this happening again and wish to extend our apologies once more for any offense this incident may have caused." And finally, Marjorie Taylor Greene apologized week ago for her use of toxic commentary. Greene said she acknowledged she had participated in and stood in favor of harmful rhetoric. Quote, "I'm only responsible for myself, my own words and actions, and I've been working on this a lot lately to put down the knives in politics. I really want to just see people be kind to one another." Unquote. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast, and now the side effects of the week.
Divo-Qvantig can cause your immune system to harm healthy parts of your body during and after treatment. These problems can be severe and lead to death. See your doctor right away if you have a cough, chest pain, shortness of breath, irregular heartbeat, diarrhea, constipation, severe stomach pain, severe nausea or vomiting, dizziness, fainting, eye problems, extreme tiredness, changes in appetite, thirst or urine, rash, itching, confusion, memory problems, muscle pain or weakness, joint pain or fever. Report severe or persistent muscle or joint pain. Tell your doctor if you have myasthenia gravis or Guillain-Barré syndrome. Immune system problems include Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis or lupus. These are not all the possible side effects. Tell your doctor about all medical conditions, including immune or nervous system problems, if you've had or plan to have an organ or stem cell transplant or receive chest radiation. Opdivo-Qvantig can harm your unborn baby.
Sounds like they took it easy on the baby. And now, finally,
I just want to say one word to you. Just one word.
Yes, sir.
Are you listening?
Yes, I am.
Microplastics. Think about it. Will you think about it?
Yes, I will.
A mouse study led by University of California Riverside biomedical scientists suggests that everyday exposure to microplastics may accelerate the development of atherosclerosis, the process that leads to heart attacks and strokes. The harmful effects were seen only in male mice, offering new clues about how microplastics may affect cardiovascular health in humans. Our findings fit into a broader pattern seen in cardiovascular research where males and females often respond differently, said the lead researcher. Although the precise mechanism isn't yet known, factors like sex, chromosomes, and hormones may play a role, unquote. Recent human studies have detected microplastics in atherosclerotic plaques and linked higher levels to increased risk of cardiovascular disease. Scientists don't understand whether or how microplastics directly contribute to artery damage. And a study by the University of Portsmouth, England, found microplastics in 100% of donkey and cattle fecal samples analyzed on the island of Lamu off the coast of Kenya. Vets at the Donkey Sanctuary Clinic there have long been calling for action due to the volume of donkey fatalities they see each year caused by plastic-induced colic. This is the first published evidence of the complete and widespread impact. The animals are foraging primarily at waste sites and in rural areas, and at least one in every 10 to 20 items ingested was plastic, as well as posing a serious risk to the donkeys and other livestock. A major food security concern is the potential for microplastic transfer to humans through consumption of contaminated animal products or crops fertilized with animal manure containing tiny plastic particles. I blame the donkeys. Enough already from this week's edition of the show. Back next week with more, same time, same radio station, on your audio device of choice, whatever you want it. The email address for this program, email. Your chance to get, no chances, but just the playlist heard here on, and all sorts of stuff to watch and listen to and enjoy, all at harryshear.com. A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego and Hawaii desks. Thanks to Pam Halstead and Thomas Walsh at WWNO New Orleans for help with today's program. I'm on Blue Sky, and I'm on Substack. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Changes Easy Radio Network. So long from the Crescent City.